Good morning. Today's daf in Yevamos, Ayin Beis. We're Ayin Alpha and Aleph. We're here in the 8th parak of the Masechta in Yevamos, and we're discussing Arelus. An Arel is not allowed to eat Truma. This is not reported in the Torah. Torah does not mention this Biferish. So the beginning of the parak wanted to know, Menahani Mili, how do I know this? Where's the source of this halacha that an Arel cannot eat Truma? And so the answer is it's a machlokus. We saw in the beginning of the parak back on Daf Ayin, machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, exactly how we darshan it. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it's learned via Gzera Shava from Truma to, or I should say better, from Karm Pesach to Truma. And according to Rabbi Akiva, it is a ribui. So this already occupied over a day of the Daf, Ayin Aleph. And so as long as we're on the topic of Arelus, the Gemara is going to continue discussing issues of an Arel. So these are principal, primary sources of the Gemara that talks about general topics of Arelus. The other one, of course, is the 19th parak of Shabbos, Rebbe Elazar de Mila. So we are just going to continue. We're on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. We're halfway down in the Amud. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Banara Mekabel Hazal. So a detailed halacha regarding an Arel, and that is an Arel could be Mekabel Hazal. Okay, so the Gemara here is teaching us the following. In order to become Tahor from Tumas Meis, so you need Hazal. You need to be sprinkled with the solution of the paraduma. You take ashes of the paraduma, mix it together with Mayim Chayim, and sprinkle it on day number 3 and day number 7. So, and you tovel in the mikvah on day number 7, and now you're tahor. And with that tahara, now you can go ahead and eat karbanos, etc. The consideration over here is the following. Let's say you're Tamei Meis, and on top of that, you also happen to be an Aro. So now, for a moment, the Gemara is entertaining the idea that because you're an Arel, so you can get sprinkled, but it's not going to help you. It's not going to do anything.
What's the point of doing it?
Well, that's exactly. Meaning, that's exactly what the Gemara is entertaining. In other words, there is no point in doing it, and if you did it, it's a helfnish. It just simply doesn't do anything. It doesn't accomplish anything. So that's the entertainment. And what Rav Yochanan is telling us is that's not correct. Meaning that you have to separate the two issues. Despite the fact that you're an Arel, Arel and Tuma keep in two separate categories. Meaning, even though you're an Arel, if you get sprinkled with the Paraduma, so that will be effective. And the Gemara says, and how do I know this? I know it historically. And since it happened historically, therefore it must work. How do I know it historically? So, Arel Mekabel Hazah, Shekei Matzinim Bavaseinu, Shekei Blazah, Kishein Arelim. Because all you have to do is just simply follow the Jewish people through the Midbar, into going into Eretz Yisrael. You do have to know the fourth parak of Sefer Yehoshua. We're going to touch on it in just a moment. But once you just follow their journey, you know they came into Eretz Yisrael. They were Arelim when they came into Eretz Yisrael, as we will establish in just a moment. And we also know that they needed Hazah immediately upon entering into Eretz Yisrael. So as a result of that, there is no alternative but to say that an Arel can, in fact, be Mekabel Hazah. Shene'emar.
Wouldn't that be Harasha'ah, one thing? And why are you laying
the Gemara is assuming that if it weren't acceptable, so then they wouldn't have done it. Meaning, what they would have simply done is just pushed off the Karm Pesach. That's all. Or, as the Gemara is going to entertain in just a moment, maybe they'll just bring Pesach Betumah. But the Gemara's assumption is that what they did is correct and accurate. Okay, Shinema. The pasuk says, "Va'am alu minei Yarden v'solachodesh arishon." So here we are. We're going to get snippets now of Psukim in Sefer Yehoshua, fourth parak, fifth parak. So basically, as we all know, Sefer Yehoshua they enter into Eretz Yisrael, and we also know what date they entered into Eretz Yisrael. The pasuk says they come in on the 10th day of Nisan. Now that is a small window in which there's a lot that needs to get done before 4 days later. Because 4 days later, of course, is the 14th day of Nisan. And we also know they offer the Karban Pesach. Now, in a moment, the Gemara is going to have a Hava Minute, which is going to be really difficult to understand, which is maybe they didn't offer the Karban Pesach, as the Gemara itself will immediately note, yeah, but it says so in the Navi, that they offer the Karban Pesach. Anyway, the facts on the ground. Facts on the ground is that they came in on the 10th. They offer the Karban Pesach on the 14th. As we will establish momentarily, they were all Tamei Meis. And so they had to rectify two primary goals that they need to do before the 14th. They had to take care of the Tumas Meis, and also they needed a Bris Mila. Oh, okay. So The Gemara says, "Va'ama lumen yardim besar lachodesh harishon, ba'asar lo mi'ilam mishum choshed orcha." So, when did they get a bris milah? Not on the 10th. Why? Because they were exhausted. In other words, they were traveling and they got to Eretz Yisrael on the 10th. So the 10th is just simply not a day in which they could have gotten a milah. So therefore, they got a milah on the 11th. When did they do the hazah? We have no alternative but to say that they must have gotten a hazah on the 10th. Why? Because again, the procedure for hazah of the paraduma is on day 3 and on day 7. So, and we're assuming that day 7 was the 14th. So therefore, the hazah must be on day 10. So basar lo mi'ilam mishum choshed orcha. Hazah imas avid lehu, lav kishein arelin. So the hazah must have been done while they were in Arel. So fine. So that is the Gemara's construction of an argument that the hazah would work even without the milah. So v'demolav v'pesach klal. Here it is. The Gemara, it's a really strange havamina. The Gemara for a moment now is entertaining. I don't know, maybe they didn't offer the Karm Pesach. So lo sakadach adichsev, v'yasu es ha-Pesach. Okay, what was that back and forth in the Gemara over there? I'm unsure. Anyway, but they offer the Karm Pesach. Maskev la marzucha v'dema pesach haba b'tomahaya. Oh, okay, this one I could totally understand. I could totally entertain. Well, maybe they did offer the Karm Pesach, but they offered it in a state of tuma. Meaning you're building the whole argument assuming that they did the hazah. Meaning as far as the meal is concerned, we don't have to assume. It says so in the Navi. That's clear. But what we do have to assume, however, is that they got the hazah. I don't know, says the Gemara. Maybe they didn't get hazah. And maybe they just offered the Karm Pesach in a state of tuma. So, Amalei Ravashi, Tanya Behedja. So the Gemara says, okay, even though the Navi doesn't tell us this, but we have Tor Shabbat Peh. We have a Mesorah. And that is Malav V'tav L'Vasu Pitzchein B'Tahara. Okay, so here's the Braisa. The Braisa tells us that we have via Mesorah that they offered that Karban Pesach, the first Karban Pesach in Eretz Yisrael, and they offered it in a state of Tahara. Okay, and so once again, so once you have all this information, so the argument now is a sound argument once you have all this information. Facts on the ground is that they were Tamei Meis when they came into Eretz Yisrael. They were Tahara by the time they were offering the Karban Pesach. They came on the 10th, they offered the Karban Pesach on the 14th, and they were Tamei Meis. So the timeline is going. I'm just reviewing the timeline.
Huh? How could they give the Tamei Meis so quickly?
So fine. So what they did is they sprinkled themselves upon entrance into Eretz Yisrael, and that was on the 10th. There, even though they're
17th, though, right?
Huh?
If they did on the 10th, they should not be ready.
No. Sprinkling is on day 3 and 7.
Oh, I see.
Right. So they sprinkled on the 10th, and then on the 11th they did the Bris Milah. 12th, 13th, 14th, they sprinkled now for the second time on the 14th. And now, okay, good. Now they were in a position where they could offer the Karm Pesach, and they offered the Karm Pesach in a state of Tahara. Okay, Ad Kan, that is point number one of today's daf. Next. Amar Rabba Bar Yitzchak, Amar Rav, Lo Nitna Priyas Mila La Avram Avinu, Shenam Rabbe Isaiah, Amar Hashem El Yoshua, Aselecha Charvos Surim. Okay, just to better understand the Gemara over here, so there are two components of the Mila. There's Mila and there's Priya. Okay, and when you see the Gemara's in Shabbos, so we get the same picture as well. Okay, if you watch a Mila nowadays, which, right, I'm interested in, Baruch Hashem, I've had the opportunity of my own kids as well. So if you watch a Mila nowadays, so you do not get the sense of a dual Mila, of a Mila and a Priya. But careful observation, the Mo'olim were really kind to me and show me, and again, I'm interested, so I've seen this numerous times. So there is a dual membrane, meaning that the Arla is really a composite of two membranes, and what it once upon a time was, back in the good old days, is that they would cut these two membranes in two stages. The first membrane was cut, that was the Mila, that's what the Gemara describes as Mila, and the second membrane was cut separately, and that was what's called Priya. Again, in the olden days, I don't know how far back I'm going, but in the olden days, so the Priya was done with not even a knife. It was done with the fingernails of a Mo'al. Okay? I'm told, I haven't seen this, but I'm told that some Mo'alim do it. Okay, I don't know. But what I...
People do it today?
Okay. Nowadays, what happens is that the two membranes are basically both going to be clamped, and they're going to be cut, and they're going to be cut at the same time, okay? But if you were to observe carefully, in other words, just ask a Mo'al to show you, and it's made up. It's a composite of two membranes. Good. So what the Gemara now is telling us is that as far as the mitzvah of Mila, as far as Avram Avinu is concerned, so he was only given the mitzvah of Mila, meaning the cutting of the first membrane. Ah, but only with Yoshua were we given then the second part of the mitzvah, and that's Priya. So the Gemara says, V'dem ha'anach d'lomal d'chsiv, kimulam hayu kola'am, ayotzim v'chola'am ayiludim. Now, the Gemara is darshaning it from the pasuk in Yoshua, which I wasn't clear about, but let's go back. So, Ba'isei hi'amar Hashem el Yoshua, selecha charvos tsurim. So over here, from the pasuk, it gives us the impression that there was a double cut, if you will. Now, V'dilma, the Gemara pushes back a little bit. V'dilma hanach d'lomal. So maybe the pasuk is describing people that were not malt. D'chsiv kimulim ayu kol ha'am ayotzim v'chol ha'am ayiludim im kein my shuv. So the Gemara says, yeah, but if you look at the pasuk says that they repeated. So what's the repetition? The repetition is on the second membrane. Elala priya umay shnis akushay sof mila l'tchilas mila ma tchilas mila ma'akevesav sof mila ma'akfin bo. So the Gemara says, and the point over here is that now that we are given the double mitzvah, okay, not exactly double mitzvah, but the mitzvah now is to cut both membranes. So the point of the Braisa is that the second membrane must be excised. It has to be cut out. And if not, the baby is not considered gemalt. In fact, now we turn to the Mishnah Shabbos. Eloin tzitzin ha-ma'akvin ha-samila basar chofetz rov ha-tara ve'in ocha b'truma. So tzitzin ha-ma'akvin. So the mola cuts, and there are still some parts of the arla that are covering. And it doesn't matter which membrane, the outer membrane, the inner membrane, any parts are covering the atar. The atar is the corona of the gid. So it's ma'akev. In other words, it holds back the mila. It's not a kasha mila. In fact, to the point in which, even if part of the Tara is covered, Kohen can't eat truma. So Amar Avinu Beitema Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba Amar Rav Basar Chofetz Rav Gova Shel Atara. And the Gemara over here is even more specific in terms of what are we looking at over here when we're saying that the artzitzin that are covering what? The entire circumference or just the width of the Atara? So the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rav, it's even just the width of the Atara. It doesn't have to be the entire circumference. Okay. Uba Midbar Maitam Elo Mahom. Okay, so what do we have right now? We've just went through little bits of Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Dal, Perek Hey. We learned together that they got a mila when they entered into Eretz Yisrael. They needed a mila. A, it's a mitzvah in of itself. And B, they were offering the Karban Pesach. And you can't offer the Karban Pesach when you're an Ara. Okay, so what of course, is the assumption of the Gemara is that throughout the desert, so nobody got a bris mila. And the obvious question is, why not? So our Gemara over here, great. Yesterday's daf, today's daf, in terms of why it is that the Jewish people did not get a mila in the midbar, Uva midbar maitam elo maho. Somewhere in Ayin Alpha Mudbeis, we are two lines from the bottom. In the midbar, why is it that they didn't get a mila? So, one suggestion of the Gemara is because exhaustion. In other words, to get a mila, so you have to be in physically good position, right? It is surgery. It's slightly dangerous. And if you're in any kind of compromised state, so you shouldn't be getting a mila. So the first answer of the Gemara is that the Jewish people in the Midbar, so they were in a constant compromised state, and therefore they didn't get a mila. Ebaizim, the Gemara gives an alternative explanation. Mishum delo nashiv le ruach sfonis. There wasn't the blowing of the ruach sfonis. The northern wind was not blowing. Okay, so what do I know about the winds? Very little. Okay, but in other words, the Gemara's assumption, of course, is that the winds are blowing in directions, north, south, east, west, and there are pluses and minuses to the blowing of the winds. The northern wind is really good. It's a healing wind. I wish I could be more helpful in terms of explaining this. Okay, my lack of understanding really is going to inhibit me in terms of really presenting this well. Okay, but in other words, the basics I understand. I don't even understand the basics, but I understand the assumptions the Gemaras are making, and that is that there are certain winds which are necessary for therapy, for healing. And the northern wind is one of those factors. And in the midbar, there was no northern wind. Okay, good. Follow-up question. Why wasn't there a northern wind? So, Mishum Talonish Nashiv Le Ruch Tzfonis. It did Tanya, Kolosanar, Bim Shanash, Ayisol, Bim Midbar, Lanash, Alam Ruch Tzfonis. So, this northern wind was not blowing for the 40 years in the desert. Good. My time up. Okay, good. So, follow-up question. Why wasn't there a northern wind for the 40 years in the desert. So one proposal of the Gemara is because the Jewish people were currently in a state of being censored. 40 years, they were nezufim lifnei amakom, right? Quasi-excommunicated. Kadosh Baruch Hu was really unhappy with the Jewish people, and therefore no northern wind for those 40 years. Okay, fair to ask the question. Why was Kadosh Baruch Hu unhappy with the Jewish people? So Rashi and Tosfos. We'll start with Rashi. So Rashi writes over here, Mishum denezufim hayu, Rashi, third line down. So he says, Mimaisa ha'egol, v'lo hayu ru'uyim lo'or noga. Okay, so because of Maisa ha'egol, so we didn't get a clear day. Okay, and the northern wind presented a clear day. Good. So Rashi says that we were in a state of excommunication because of Maisa ha'egol. If you look at Tosos, Tosos says, how could that be? Nezufim hayu, third Tosos. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Mimaisa Meraglim V'lo Kemosha Pirish Bekunshus Mimaisa Egel. So the Re, the Bala Tosfo, says no, it's not talking about the Chet Egel, it's talking about Mimaisa Meraglim, the Chet Meraglim. That is why we were censored, excommunicated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not like Rashi. And in fact, how could Rashi be right, asks Tosfos. Sha'arei, I'm reading Tosfos. Sha'arei Machol Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'amar Lahem Salachti. Didn't we receive full forgiveness after Chet Ha'egel? And didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu pardon us? And didn't we have a Mishkan afterwards with Hashras HaShchina? Good. So Tosfos cannot entertain the idea that the Nezifa comes as a result of the Chet Ha'egel. Therefore, it must be Chet HaMeraglim. So we have a basic machlokas over here between Rashi and Tosfos in terms of why we were excommunicated for those 40 years. Was it Chet Ha'egel or was it Chet HaMeraglim? In defense of Rashi, that says that it was Chet Ha'egel, so what you could suggest is that as far as the Mishkan is concerned, right, Tosfos says the Mishkan obviously shows that there was a full forgiveness. So what you could suggest in defense of Rashi is that maybe the Mishkan wasn't necessarily a response to Chet Ha'egel. Now, although that would be a lovely suggestion, the Ramban says like that in Chumash. Rashi for sure does not say like that. Rashi clearly writes on Chumash that the Mishkan was a response to the Chet Ha'egel, meaning it was part of the way that Kadosh Baruch Hu showed us that there was a kapara. The part of this discussion is really connected to a very fundamental question. When was the Mishkan introduced to us? Before or after Chet Ha'egel? In the Torah itself, it can't be any clearer. The Mishkan was introduced before Chet Ha'egel, meaning the Parshas of Truma Tetzaveh is the introduction of the Mishkan. When did Chet Ha'egel come? Afterwards, in Parshas Kisisa, right? And then Vayakob Pekudei, repetition of the Mishkan. So the Ramban says, so what do you see from here? The Mishkan has nothing to do with Chet Ha'egel. The Mishkan was given before Chet Ha'egel. Okay, that's the Ramban. Rashi on the Torah writes, we all know this. Rashi on the Torah writes, no, there's no chronology in the Torah. Yes, it's true that the Mishkan was introduced before Chet Ha'egel, but when was the Mishkan actually presented, meaning chronologically? After Chet Ha'egel. Okay. So Rashi and Chumash clearly understands that the Mishkan is a response to Chet Ha'egel. So as much as I'd like to try to defend Rashi over here, but Tosus's point is also Rashi's point on Chumash as well. Okay, anyway, so going back to our Gemara, let me just chart out the Gemara again. Gemara observes that the Jewish people did not get a Mila in the Midbar. The Gemara wants to know why. The Gemara right now is advancing because there was no Ruach Tzfonis. Ruach Tzfonis is a therapeutic wind that provides, our ability to heal after the Bris Mila, and there was no northern wind during those 40 years. Why was there no wind in those 40 years? The Gemara is addressing that. So the Gemara gives one of two possibilities. One is because we were nezufim, because we were excommunicated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why were we excommunicated? So that for that we saw Rashi and Tosfos. Now, alternatively, the reason why there was no northern wind is not because of our being excommunicated, but because we had the Anani Kavod, and the northern wind would blow away the Anani HaKavod. Okay, again, I'm only presenting the Gemara with very little understanding. Akash Baruch Hu couldn't create the Anani HaKavod that can withstand the northern winds? Okay, apparently not. Again, I'm not fully understanding, but that's the second approach of the Gemara. Amra Papa Hilka Chima Deiva V'yuma Deshusa Lo Mahalinan Bey. V'loma Suchrinan Bey. So, and Rapapa says, now note, so that if we have a cloudy day, meaning it is not a day that is conducive to healing. So if you have a cloudy day, so don't do a bris meal on such a day, because you're not gonna properly heal. So veha idna didashu beirabim shomer pesayim Hashem. Now, if you'll notice that the mole does not go outside to see what kind of day it is before he does a bris milah. And this is not a recent event. The Gemara points out, for years, centuries now, we've been doing this, meaning we have not been looking at the weather before doing the bris milah. And even though it's a cloudy day and you don't have the healing powers of the sun, nevertheless, we do a bris milah. Why? So the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim Shomer Pesayim Hashem. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over fools, meaning sometimes we engage in some kind of foolish behavior, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over us. Okay.
I mean, if you're indoors anyway, what you need sun exposure, no matter what happens to the sun.
Yeah. Okay. Right. The Gemara's assumptions are is that the sun is somehow provides healing. That's the basic assumption of the Gemara. Okay. Shomer Pesayim Hashem has to be balanced. Right. Like so many times, I find myself saying this. So it has to be balanced. It does not mean that we get to be engaged in reckless behavior. Of course we can't behave in reckless behavior, right? Engaging in reckless behavior is reckless. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu does not want that. And so when do we say don't engage in reckless behavior? And when do we say Shomer Pesayim Hashem? Good. So for that, we need Hadracha. We definitely need guidance in terms of when that is. I'm going to give you a funny example in terms of when we can engage in Shomer Pesayim Hashem. It's really a funny example. The Gemara says, where is the Gemara? Shabbos? Okay, forgive me, I don't remember. The Gemara says that you cannot, when after having gone to the bathroom and now you want to wipe yourself. So the Gemara says that you cannot wipe yourself with anything that's flammable. Okay? Back in the good old days, right? Remember, the Gemara numerous times tells us that they would use stones in terms of wiping themselves after having gone to the bathroom. And the Gemara says using flammable material is very dangerous. Okay. And meanwhile, what do we do? What we all do is that we use paper to wipe ourselves. I understand it's soft, but it's flammable. So the Aruch HaShulchan, you'll forgive me. I forgot which Shimon it was, but the Aruch HaShulchan writes, okay. So what we're doing is we're acting in derelict behavior, right? It's irresponsible to use things that are flammable. So the Aruch HaShulchan over there says, Shomer Pesayim Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu watches over fools. Okay, I know that's a funny example, but, okay. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, we are in the Gemara, we're 9, Beis Amad Aleph. Okay, let's go. Kol Osan Arbaim Shana Shai Yisrael Bemidbar Lo Hayu Yom Shalom Nishba Baruch Tzfonus Bechatzi HaLayla Shenemar Vayihi Bechatzi HaLayla Vashem Yikal Kol Bechor. Okay, so I know we just got done saying that for the 40 years that we were in the Midbar. There was no Ruch Tzfonus, but that's during the day. But at night, specifically at midnight, so then there was Ruch Tzfonus. Rashi over here quotes the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos describes how David HaMelech set his alarm so that it would go off at midnight. Am I joking? Not in the least. So the Gemara over there describes how he had a harp or some sort of musical instrument, some sort of wind instrument that he set up in a northern direction so that at midnight when the Ruch Tzfonus came, so it would blow. David HaMelech would wake up, and what would he do? So he would do a version of Tikkun Chatzos, okay? Which, right, good. Special people do that. David HaMelech was let's call him the first that did that. I don't know if I'm right, but anyway. So and this midnight Ruach Tzfonus, so it's critical, so critical that it even went off during the Midbar. So my Talmud, I Kamash Malan Deis Ratzon Milsehi, it's considered Neis Ratzon, a very auspicious time, and so good. So that is the Ruach Tzfonus that even occurred in the Midbar for those 40 years. So what about Mila? So for Mila, again, I'm just explaining what the Gemara is assuming. I'm not good for any better explanation. But for the Ruach Tzfonus that's healing, so that you need during the day. And what we're describing right now is only the Ruach Tzfonus that came at Chatzos Laila. Amrav Huna Dvar Torah. Okay, this is a good place to pause, not stop, but pause. Okay, so for a good part of today, so we were discussing aspects of Mila. Specifically so far today, we went over an RL. An RL is eligible to receive Hazah. For a moment, we entertained. The Gemara didn't even entertain it. But you could entertain that the RL is not in a position to receive Hazah. The Gemara says, no, he is. And we know that when they entered into Eretz Yisrael. And then that segued into the Gemara's next discussion, which is they didn't get a bris mila in the Midbar with a discussion in terms of why not. Okay, new topic for today. Still on the topic, on the overarching topic of Arelus, and now the following. Okay, once you have a bris mila, so that of course means that there's a full exposure of the atara. Okay, and now there's something called mashach. Mashach is where you take whatever remaining membrane there is and you try to pull it back over in order to look as if you did not have a bris mila. So why on earth would anyone want to do that? The answer is because he wants to retract on his bris mila. So this term that's used to describe such an individual is called a mashach. Literally means to draw or to pull. So what he's trying to do now is he's trying to take whatever membrane is left and pull it back over the atara. Okay, now, goes without saying, don't do that, right? The bris mila is for the purposes of exposure. So it goes without saying. What we're going to be discussing now in the Gemara is that for the individual who did that, and even if he was forced to do that, stay tuned, we'll talk more about that in a moment. So is he now eligible to eat truma? So that's what we're discussing. Amar Rav Huna Dvar Torah Moshech Olcha B'Truma. So Rav Huna says as follows. That if he is Moshech, so then min hatori can eat truma. Why? Because he got a bris mila, and so there was an exposure of the atara, but now umidivrayim gazru alav mimnei nirka arel. But because of the appearance that he looks like an arel right now, so midrabanan he is banned from eating truma. Meisvei the gemara quotes the brisa moshech sarach shiyimol. So the Braisa, now right now we're quoting just a small snippet of the Braisa. A mashuch tsarech shiyimol. He should be retracting that membrane, bringing it back so that the atara is in fact exposed. So what the Gemara for a moment now is thinking is that is a din d'oraisa. So the Gemara immediately responds with, no, it's not a din d'oraisa. It's a din d'rabbanan, mid d'rabbanan. That's a din d'rabbanan, meaning at first, the Gemara thought, let's challenge Rav Huna from the Braisa. The Gemara says, no, it's not a challenge to Rav Huna. In fact, it supports Rav Huna. That's a rabbinic requirement. Udikarile, my karile, hatzarech katani. So, in fact, if you just reread that snippet of the Braisa again, it's three words. Mashuch tzarech limol. But you know that Rav Huna's right. Right? Look at the language choice of the Braisa. It says, mashuch tzarech lamol. What does the word tzarech means? He should. Now, if we're talking about a bona fide obligation, do you think we're using the word sarich? Of course not. We're going to use a word like chayev. Okay, so, katay b'seifa. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the questioner thought, oh, it's not, you're right, that part of the braisa is not really the strength of my question. The strength of my question is really coming from the second half of the braisa, where it says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yomo mimnesha sakanehi lo, don't do it because it's dangerous. Amru lo. So they say to Rav Yehuda, nothing doing. It's not dangerous. In fact, many people did this during the time of Ben Kuziva. I'll explain better in just a moment. And what they were able to do is they had many children afterwards, meaning the danger that the Gemara at least is entertaining is the fact that if you just, too much manipulation, too much, right, pulling, pushing, and what it's going to do is that it's going to make the man impotent. And what the Gemara is pointing out is, it's not true. Many people took their mashuch and they retracted it. They brought it back to where it should have been, and they fathered children no problem. Shenemro himol yimol afilo meipamim. In fact, the halacha is that you cut off the arla, and if necessary, and if you need to cut some more, so you cut some more. The Omer is B'C.F.R. The Rabbos is a mashach. Okay. So, and the Gemara at the end of the Braisa quoted as B'C.F.R. The Rabbos is a mashach. That they rejected my bris, and that's a description of the mashach. Now, My Omer. So at the end of the Brisa, you see what just happened? We quoted a pasuk. So I might have thought that himol yimol is coming to include tzitzin, little bits of flesh that are covering the atar, like we discussed earlier. Tashmas brisi efar, the rabbis is a mashoch. So that comes to tell me, no, that the brisi efar, what is the rejection of the bris mila, is that even if, let's say, the membrane was cut and the atar was revealed, but then what happened is that whatever leftover membrane that is, you draw it back over the atara, that needs to be cut based on the pasuk. So who suffered? The questioner thought, the maksha thought, so you see what just happened. We described the mashuch. We quoted a pasuk. It's a din d'oraisa. A challenge to Rav Huna. Rav Huna says it's only a din d'rabbanan. And the Gemara says, no. Okay, good. Now we just better understand what the questioner thought. The one who was challenging Rav Huna based on this braisa. We thought that the question was all a predicate of the fact that in the last part of the braisa, you know, the moshech, what he's got to do is he's got to take that membrane and bring it back and reveal his atar once again. And the Gemara quoted a pasuk, so we thought it was a din d'oraisa. It's not a din d'oraisa. It's a din d'rabbanan. The pasuk is just simply an asmachta. Okay. Having the arla drawn back over the atara, and then the requirement to bring it back. So the Gemara said, incidentally, you know, plenty of people did this during the time of Ben Kuziva, and they were not impotent afterwards. They fathered many children afterwards. So a little bit of history. Ben Kuziva, so we know him better as Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba, Ben Kuziva, one and the same person. So what was he? So today I'm going to call him a king. Why? Because that's what Rashi does. So Rashi in today's daf describes him as being a king, and he was a melech over the Jewish people for 2.5 years. Okay, and bits and pieces of Gemara's here and there, and together with the Rambam. So basically, what happened was is that we are somewhere in the second century. Okay, somewhere in the 130s, right thereabouts. Okay, there was a revolution against the Romans. The Romans at that point in time were really, really harsh on the Jewish people, and Bar Kokhba, sponsored by Rabbi Akiva. Right, Rabbi Akiva was a full supporter in Ben Kuziva, and as the Rambam describes it, he thought that Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach. Right, the Rambam says it with unbelievable clarity. So they staged a revolt against the Romans, and this Bar Kokhba was a king for 2.5 years. And Rashi points out over here, right here in today's daf. I'm just not reading the Rashi inside, but Rashi points out over here that the Romans were so cruel that even for the Jews who got a mila, so they forced them to take their whatever surplus membrane there was, and pull it back over the atara. And so what Bar Kokhba instructed the Jews to do is to pull it back, right? And so that's what our Gemara is describing when it said that many people did this during Bar Kokhba, and they fathered children, many children afterwards as well. Okay. Anyway, that's a crash course Jewish history lesson. Let's continue in the Gemara. As soon as I find my place, Meisvei. I got it. Ayin Beis Amad Aleph, halfway down in the Amud. Tumtum ain't ochel b'truma. So as far as the Tumtum is concerned, Tumtum is not eating truma. So we are going to be discussing now for the good balance of today's daf, Tumtum and androgynous. Let's go over some basic information. Okay, so what's a Tumtum? So the baby was born, and there is genitalia. It happens to be covered right now. In other words, there's a patch of membrane that's covering the genitalia. So it is unclear exactly whether this is a male or a female. Okay, so the best way to describe it right now is suffix. We don't know. Okay, can the membrane be removed? Maybe. Okay, well, in a moment we're going to entertain that idea. Okay, androgynous. So what's an androgynous? So somebody is exhibiting both genitalia. The word androgynous is a composite of two words. Andro, which is man, and right, these are Greek words. So andro, which is man, and gyn from the word gynecologist, which is woman. So this person is exhibiting both genitalia, male and female. Halacha now is going to struggle in terms of whether or not he's male, whether he's female, whether he's chayiv in mitzvos, which mitzvos is he chayiv in, can he marry? Okay, aside from all the other complexities that he or she is going to deal with in life. But on top of that, halacha is also going to struggle as well. Good. So that's right, we knew this, it's just these are basics. So tumtum ain ochel b'truma. So a kohen tumtum cannot eat truma. Why? because there may be a mila necessary. We don't know, but if there is a mila necessary, he didn't get a mila. In other words, possibly he's an ara. However, nasha va'avadav ochlin, his wife and his avadim can eat. Now, him owning avadim, that's easy. Him having a wife, that's really challenging. Hold that thought. Mashach v'nola kishum al harei lo ochlin. Now, when it comes to a mashach and a nolad, so again, a mashach, so somebody who got a bris mila, but then took the excess skin and pulled it back over. So for that individual, and nola kishum al harei elo ochlin. So they're allowed to eat truma. That's really the critical point that we want to focus on, but let's finish the braisa. An androgynous ocha b'truma, vein ocha b'kachim. Now, an androgynous, he can eat truma. Of course, assuming that the male genitalia does get a bris mila, so he can eat truma, but he can't eat carbonus, he can't eat kachim. Rashi explains over here, why can't he eat kachim? So Rashi points out over here, because which kachim are we talking about? A chatos anashim, can only be eaten by zichrei kohuna, can only be eaten by male kohanim. And this androgynous is partly female. Okay, again, totally unclear what he is. Is he male? Is he female? The Gemara also entertains the idea of the Gemara in Bechoros. The Gemara also entertains the idea that maybe Beria Bifnei Atzmo, maybe a separate column, separate category. Whatever the case is, not in a position to eat Chatas and Asham. Okay. And let me, questions are really good. Let me just go on. Tumtum ain't ocha lo b'chuma v'lo b'kadashim. As far as the tumtum is concerned, can't eat chuma, can't eat kachim. The tumtum is a suffix arel, so that's going to inhibit it from eating chuma, and again by kachim as well. So he's an arel, and on top of that, if the kachim we're talking about is chatos anasham, so then he may be a female, and females are not eating those karbanos. Okay, anyway. The part of the braisa that we want to focus in right now is that mashach. Katani miyot mashach minola kishum al hare elo ochlin. So it sounds like from the braisa is actually really clear that a mashach is allowed to eat. So tiyufta de Rav Huna tiyufta. So that is going to be very challenging to Rav Huna. Now, what I just read is the girsa that we have in our Gemara. Rashi has another girsa. Rashi says that this other girsa is one in which he much prefers. If you look at Rashi, you follow me, Katani Miyaz Mashach Ochel, and drop three, four lines down in that Rashi. Lishna Achrina Garcinan, Lema Misayel Ele Rav Huna, Tumta in Ochel, Vahai Ochlin, Damashach Venola Mal Medaraisa Kamar. So Rashi prefers the girsa in the Gemara in which the Gemara assumes that a Mashach cannot eat Truma. In other words, right, a Mashach, somebody who's taking whatever membrane there and pulling it over his atara, he can't eat truma. Meaning like Rav Huna said, right? The Gemara did say the words tiyufta to Rav Huna tiyufta, but Rashi says, here's what I prefer. I prefer that the Gemara reads that we always knew that a mashach cannot eat truma. What's under discussion over here, is that a din d'oraisa or is that a din d'rabbanan? V'yasiyato de Rav Huna. V'zu shemati v'hiniris ikar. So Rashi says that what we learn from the Braisa is that mid-Araisa it's acceptable. Meaning the Braisa was only talking about on a Araisa level. That's the only point of discussion in the Braisa. And that means to say that mid-Araisa Mashal can eat Truma, and mid-Rabbanan he cannot. Mid-Karmina, I'm reading the Rashi. Mid-Karmina, Lekaman, Lema Ketanai, Mai La Ba'ak, Amithlik, the Marsa of the Araisa, Marsa de Rabbanan, Ama, Leka Laman, Demach Shulagamre. We're going to see the Gemara upcoming in just a few minutes from now. No one's going to entertain the idea that a mashach can go ahead and eat truma. That is not on the table. The only thing that's on the table is his prohibition going to be a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan? So when our Gemara here quotes the braisa that says the mashach is allowed to eat truma, it only means on a d'oraisa level. But mid d'rabbanan is banned and restricted. And then I guess what Rashi would have to therefore do is take out the words tiyufta de Rav Huna tiyufta. Okay. So I know that little piece was complicated over there because we're touching up on some of the girsas of the Gemara. But again, when I say we're touching up, I mean Rashi's touching up. Right? Rashi has the right to do that. Okay. Amar Mar. Tumtum ein ocha b'chuma nasha v'adav ochlim So as long as we learned the Braisa, so let's go over the let's go back over the Braisa and address a really simple point, which is that a Tumtum has a wife. To which the Gemara says, what? How did that happen? So now shall the Tumtum manale. So Elam the Kaddish Tanya Tumtum Shekiddush Kedush of Kedushin, this Kaddish Kedush of Kedushin. So the Gemara says, okay, so he was Mekaddish a woman, meaning you can affect Kedushin through Kesef. So maybe he went over to a woman and he said, Harayat Mekadeshusli. In fact, we have a Braisa that says that what do we have to do? So we have to be concerned that he's a man, and therefore the Kedushin is valid. So the Gemara says, okay, we'll concern ourselves that he's a man, but to assume that he's a man so that he can eat truma, that's going too far. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. Safik isha he, or who? You understand my confusion. So safik isha who? Vein isha mekadeshes isha. Okay, so again, the tumtum may be a woman. A woman can't be mekadesh a woman. Okay, so Amar Abaye. So it's a simple question. The Braisa says that a tumtum is having a wife. How does he have a wife? How can that possibly be? Meaning, and in order to enable her to eat truma, like it can't be. Oh, so it needs clarification. So the Gemara is going to give one of two answers. Abaye and Rava. Amar Abaye. So Abaye proposes kishabetzav nikaros bibachutz. Ah, so he's not tumtum classical. He's a tumtum in which it's true that the member is covered, but the beitzim are exposed, meaning we know he's a male. So then what's the problem with him eating truma? The problem is that because the actual gid is covered, so therefore he can't get a bris milah. So we know he's a male, but he's an aro. Okay. The answer of Abaye is really challenging, meaning it resolves the marriage issue, but then what's the chiddush? Meaning, so in other words, we're using the word tumtum, but it's not in the classic sense, meaning we know what gender he is. Okay, so, but
the chiddush is they do some stuff and not
right,
everything.
Right, right, okay. Rava Amar Mai Nashav Imo. Rava says no. When we say Nashav, we don't mean his wife, we mean the women in his life. Otherwise known as his mother. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says, Imo Pshita. So the Gemara says, well, of course his mother can eat truma. Meaning, if he's a Kohen, that means dad was a Kohen. So, of course, mom can eat truma. So, ma'u detema mole machel shem mole dena machel kamash malan. The Gemara says like this. No, there's a chiddush over here. Because, yes, it's true, dad was a Kohen. But dad is out of the picture. Let's say dad passed away. Now, what? As we learned already, back in the seventh parak of our Masechta, so a child can enable a parent to eat, specifically a mother to eat. But that, right? But that is what the Gemara is entertaining is as follows. It doesn't matter whether the child is male or female. And if you recall, if you remember, it doesn't even matter if the child is Yisrael. Now, the child, of course, is not a Yisrael. The grandchild could be Yisrael. Doesn't matter. As long as there's child from her late husband, so she can eat truma. What we're entertaining for a moment is, okay, but maybe not the tumtum. Why? Because the tumtum simply cannot create progeny. And since the tumtum can't create progeny, so for a moment, we're going to think maybe the child cannot enable the mother to eat truma. The chiddush is no. This child can enable the mother to eat truma. Tashma. Tumtum eino ochel lo b'truma v'lo b'kadashim. Okay, so a tumtum cannot eat na truma na kachim. Bishlam la ba'i tan resha arel vadai ketani sefa suffik arel. So for a ba'ye, I get it. In the beginning of the Braisa, where we discussed tumtum, it was arel vadai. At the end of the Braisa, what are we talking about? Suffik Arel. Good. Ela la Rava tumtum de sefa lamali. But for Rava now, the second mention of tumtum not eating truma is totally repetitive. And what is it coming to teach me? So my tumtum Arel. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what in the second part of the Braisa when it said tumtum, it meant Arel. The Gemara says, what? Hasha suffik Arel lo achel vade Arel achel. If a suffik arel is not eating truma, you know a vade arel is not eating truma. So ma tam kamar, ma tam tumtum eino ochel b'truma, min misha suffik arel hovare eino ochel lo b'truma v'lo b'kadashim. The Braisa is just explaining itself. Meaning, what's our tumtum? Our tumtum is a suffik arel. Again, we don't know what's underneath the membrane. There may be a gid, there may not be a gid. But if there's a gid, so that gid is currently not circumcised. So because an arel can't eat truma, the tumtum can't eat truma because the tumtum is a suffik arel. That's what the Braisa meant. Lemakitanai. The very bottom of Ayin Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara now is proposing the following. Okay, and this is the way the Rashi primed us to read the Gemara, which is that everyone agrees to Rav Huna, somebody who had a bris milah, and then takes the skin and pulls it back over the atara to appear as if he is not mouth. And Rav Huna says that mid araisa he's allowed to eat truma, but mid rabbanan he may not eat truma. And this is Rav Huna's point, is that that's a din de rabbanan. What the Gemara now is entertaining is that maybe it's a machlokus. What's a machlokus? Whether or not his prohibition of eating truma is a din de rabbanan, or is it a din de araisa? Okay, lema kitanai. Mashuch, we're skipping the parentheses. Vigirshin is gaya kishim ma'ol. Vikatan sha'avras mano. Visharkol animon lasu yimishi eshlo shtei arelos. Eino nimolim ela b'yom. Rebbe Elazar b'Rebbe Shimon Omar bizmano. Ein nimolim ela b'yom shlo bizmano. Nimolim b'yom of a layla. Okay, so we have the following people under discussion. Number one, the mashuch. Okay, as we already described. Number two, a ger who was born ma'ol. Sorry. A ger that converted after Mila. And also a kunchavar's mano, right after the eighth day. In all these circumstances where some form of Mila is necessary, so can it be done at night? That's a machlokus. According to the Tanakama, you can only do it during the day. Meaning just like a standard Mila on eighth day is only done during the day, not at night. So too all these other types of Milas are to be done during the day. And Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon says, no, these are not a classic milah that's done on the eighth day. These are all, if you will, secondary milahs. And so therefore, they can be done during the day. They can even be done during the night as well. Okay. Now, the Gemara makes the following argument. Mila ba'akimiflegi. Here's what we know. We know there's a machlokas. Here's what we don't know. What are they arguing about? So the Gemara proposes, that whether or not the mila of a mashach can be done during the day, and only during the day, or it can be done either day or night, maybe it's a function of the fact of whether or not a mashach is considered a din d'oraisa, if it's a din d'rabbanan. Meaning, if it's a din d'oraisa, so it's got to follow classic mila rules, which is only during the day. If, on the other hand, the mashach is only a din d'rabbanan, maybe not. Maybe it could be done during the day. Maybe it could be done at night. So Vidhisbra, the Gemara says, that is not a good pshat in the Braisa. Kan shavar zmano mi'ikal aman dama d'rabbanan. The Gemara says, it can't be. Because did you see who else is mentioned in that Braisa? Kan shalob zmano. Kan didn't receive a meal on day 8 for whatever reason. So now, he requires a bris mila. Are we for a moment going to entertain that that's a din d'rabbanan? Of course not. That's a din d'oraisa. So what we just offered as a suggestion in the Braisa is really not a good pshat. So ela dekulei ama mashach d'rabbanan. So the Gemara says no. The mashach is a din d'rabbanan, like Rav Huna taught us, right? Min ha-Torah is considered gemalt, but mid d'rabbanan he's going to be banned and restricted from eating truma. V'kan shav zmano d'oraisa, and we all know that katan who did not receive a bris mila on day 8, but any time subsequent, that's a din d'oraisa. We all know that as well. So v'hachi ba'akimiflegi marsav v'darshinon v'yom or marsav v'lo darshinon uvayom. And it's just a question of whether or not you darshan uvayom, the extra vav. So the extra vav is there to tell us that even if we're doing secondary mila. Now, what I mean by that is the classic mila is done on day 8. What if I'm doing a non-day 8 mila? Are we following the same rules of bayom? So if you darshan that extra vav uvayom, so the answer would be yes, it has to be done during the day and only during the day. If you're not darshaning it, so then there, it allows for flexibility. You can do the mila anytime when you're not doing a day 8 mila, you could do it either during the day or at night. So kiad yasav rav yochem gadarish nosa bezmano eno nisraf ela bayom. And a parallel discussion, and that is, when do I burn nosar? So again, what is nosar? Carbon that's left over beyond its time. So what's the requirement? Don't leave it over. That's a lav. And if you leave it over, you burn it. Right? Lo sasir mimenu ad boker. A pasuk in Parshas Bo. Lo sasir mimenu ad boker. Benasar mimenu. Ba'ish tisrofu. Good. Shalob is mano nisra. I'm sorry. Bein bayom bein malayla. So now, what if it's Nosar that is not in its classic state, meaning the day that it turns into Nosar? Let's say it's left over for some time. And can I burn it even at night? So here, Rav Yochanan says you can burn it both during the day and the night. Now Rav Elazar, when he hears this halacha regarding Nosar, so he says, what are you talking about? Do you not know the Braisa? So So Rav Elazar quotes the Braisa to Rav Yochanan that even though you're not doing the Bris Milah on day 8, it's not a classic Bris Milah, nevertheless, you're still going to be doing the Bris Milah only during the day. And so Rav Elazar says to Rav Yochanan, same thing by Nosar. Even if I'm not burning it in its classic state of the first opportunity, even though it's a makeup date, nevertheless, you're only going to be doing it during the day. And even though you don't darshan vav, meaning we just had this in the Gemara, Rabbi Kiva darshan's vavin, other Tanaim do not. But over here, it's not just a vav, it's a vav and it's a hey. So everyone darshan. So ishtik, so Rav Yochanan did not know how to respond, meaning he heard Rav Elazar quote this braisa. Rav Yochanan was silenced. And after Rav Elazar leaves, so Rav Yochanan turns to his brother-in-law, Reish Lakish, and he says, wow. Rav Elazar is darshing like Moshe Rabbeinu, meaning that was amazing. So Amalei Reish Lakish didehi masnisahi. So Reish Lakish says, please don't be so impressed, meaning Rav Elazar, all he's doing is he's quoting a braisa. So, Hechatana Leipa Torah's Kohanim. Oh, really? Where can I find the Braisa? You'll find it in Torah's Kohanim. Torah's Kohanim is Medrash Halacha, right? Going back to the Tanayim.
So, could it be that both Reish Lakish and Rav Elazar were Rav Yochanan's students and they knew this Braisa and he didn't? That's strange, no?
Same thought. So, Nafek Tanya Betalsi Yuma Vesavra Betalsi Arche. So, what he did is, he brushed up. For three days, he committed Torah's Kohanim to memory, and then for 3 months, so then he processed it. Which, by the way, there are a number of Gemaras that speak to this idea of how to learn, meaning how to learn, and that is that first just know it, meaning read it, and then digest. Okay, I could go on this point. I'm not going to go on that point. In fact, we're going to stop now. And we're going to pick it. We're going to pick it up tomorrow. Let's recap our daf today. First and foremost, we talked about an aral receiving hazah in order to become tahor. So, is it a good hazah? The answer is yes. Good, right? That's the short version of a longer discussion. Okay. The next discussion that we had in today's daf is the second part of the Mila, right, called Priya. There are two membranes. So the excisement of the second membrane, the one that's underneath, so that wasn't given to Avraham Avinu, but that was only introduced by Yoshua and when they get into Eretz Yisrael. And it becomes an integral part of the mitzvah. Mila and Priya become integral. The Gemara quoted the Mishnah Shabbos. Okay, that was number two. They didn't receive a Bris Mila in the Midbar. How do I know they didn't receive a Bris Milah in the Midbar? So, I'm sorry. But let me phrase the question better. Why didn't they receive a Bris Milah in the Midbar? So, two proposals of the Gemara. One is because there wasn't a Ruach Tzfonis, there wasn't a northern wind. Why wasn't there a northern wind? So, for here, two suggestions of the Gemara. Either because our excommunicated state. Why were we excommunicated? Rashi and Tosfos. Or the alternative is because we don't want to, Akash Baruch Hu didn't want to upset the Ananei Kavod. Okay. But if you don't have a clear healing day, therapeutic day, so principally you shouldn't get a Mila. The Gemara says, you know what? Good advice, but we happen to ignore that advice. And we do a Bris Mila, even on a day that is not as therapeutic a day. Shomer Pesayim Hashem. A little bit more on the northern wind we discussed today. And that is that despite the fact that in the Midbar there wasn't a northern wind during the day, but there was Tikkun Chatzos. Chatzos Laila, the northern wind blows every night at midnight. Okay, that even during the 40 days in the Midbar. And then for the rest of today's daf, Rav Huna. Rav Huna said that if you have somebody who was Moshech Arla, got a bris milah, and then, right, sounds unbelievably painful, then what he did is he took whatever excess membrane there was and he pulled it back over the Atara in order to cover the Atara to look as if he is not a Mahul. So such an individual is Min HaTorah considered still a Malt, somebody who has a milah, but Midrabanan cannot eat Truma. Okay? And then for the remainder of today's daf, litigation of this halacha Rav Huna. Gemara's conclusion, we follow Rav Huna.